Good morning. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus. And joining us today are Dr. Yolanda Leyva. Dr. Leyva is the director of the Institute of Oral History, and she is also with the History Department. She teaches history. We are also joined by Daniel Carey Whalen. And Daniel is a coordinator for Museum Studies in the Department of Art. Charlie Vasquez, who is a graduate student and pretty soon on her way to, I guess, find out if she's going to pursue her doctorate, and that is something that she's looking forward to. And Lucero Duran, who is a political science major here in our fine college at UTEP, and they're here to talk about an exciting new event, new exhibit, that's the Museo Hermano at the El Paso Museum of History. But first of all, thank you all very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis.
Thank you.
And let's start off with you, Dr. Leyva, because you have talked about similar things in the past. Tell us a little bit about this project. Is it different from what we've seen in the past, or is it kind of adding to it?
This exhibit, that's a collaboration with Museum Studies and with Museo Urbano, is really adding to what both of us have done before. The exhibit is called Through the Eyes of a Child, Growing Up in El Paso, 1880 to 1950. And it's based partially on research I've been conducting for many years about Mexican-American children in our city. What both my graduate students and Daniel's undergraduates did over the past years, they also conducted research on other groups of children so that we could make it a more inclusive history of children, including children of different economic classes, of different ethnicities, nationalities.
One of the interesting questions that pops up is we hear a lot about today's millennials and what they grew up with, and the fact that we say, well, you know, when we were your age, we'd go out and play from sun up until it turned light dark, and mom would call us in. Tell us a little bit about perhaps what are some of the interesting things you all found out about growing up from this time period, 1880 to 1950.
Well, I think that education is one of the things that was very interesting to me personally, because we were able to look at what were called the American schools. So those were the schools north of the tracks, what were called the Mexican schools that were in South El Paso. And also look at Douglas, the school for African-American children, and see how each group of children had a different educational experience going well into the 20th century.
And did you look at also as far as some of the things that the children did as far as, games, playing, besides hitting the books?
We have a good display of books and of games.
So let's switch over to Daniel. Daniel Carey Whalen is the director, coordinator, actually, of Museum Studies here in the Department of Art. And first of all, Daniel, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us what your title is, what does it involve as far as being a coordinator for people who may not be familiar with a Museum Studies program?
Right. So we have here at UTEP, we have a minor in Museum Studies. So all students in the College of Liberal Arts need a minor. So for those students out there who might be interested in this program, you can get a minor in Museum Studies. Just go to the College of or the Department of Arts website. So I coordinate all people who are going through the minor, advising them, students who might be interested in the minor, their path, what classes they can take. But I then also teach two of the three core courses in the Museum Studies program. Carrie Doyle at the Rubin Center also teaches the third class. So my classes are, the first class is kind of an introduction to museum studies, what museums are, how they fit in society, why they're important. And then the second class, this class that Lucero's in, that was really the class that did a lot of work in partnering with the History Department, is more of a curation class. And so the purpose of this class is to kind of bring objects through to into a museum exhibit. And in this case, it was lots of artifacts and images, and we worked in partnership with the El Paso Museum of History downtown. And that that was the venue that we were able to show off the students' work in.
Lucero, you want to share with us about your experience?
Well, it was a great experience, two good experiences, I say. I mean, many of us, we want to get into the museum department or the cultural affairs, and we don't know where to start. So right here, we were able to see some of us wanted to do curatorial duty. Some of us were more of the research or finding objects, networking. So it was great for us to kind of see where we fit in. And, you know, this exhibit was really great to figure out that for all of us. We're glad, you know, that we were able to bring that to the public, to a greater, not just students, but all of El Paso public to see.
Charlie, what about you? Tell us what you learned.
Oh, I learned so much about this city. Well, I've been gone for a few years, and I was able to come back to finish my degree, and it's been nothing but a pleasant and positive experience for me. Mostly, I think what surprised me about researching this exhibit was the idea of childhood. That's one of the things that has really stuck with me. And we think of childhood in today's terms, or maybe even in, you know, the recent past terms. And if you think about, you know, the end of the past century, the idea of childhood wasn't really universal. You know, even toys weren't available for everyone. You know, alive, especially if you were from a certain socioeconomic class, you maybe made your own toys. Or you didn't have a childhood because you had to work to provide for your family. So those were some of the things that we focused on for this exhibition, which I thought was really interesting. And the differences were in the education, but as well as, you know, socially, there was a lot of differences in that sense. So it made me realize not just that we're lucky, but the progression of you know, the border area and how that's moved on.
Yolanda, this period that you're talking about, it's 15 years after the Civil War ends, but then they also experience the Mexican Revolution and then World War I and World War II. So a lot for these you know, children. And of course, not all of them experienced everything, but the fact that what was going on in these worlds of the children.
It's a lot of change going on nationally, internationally, and locally. So in the 1880s, the railroad comes to El Paso. And suddenly we go from a few hundred people to 10,000 people. The Mexican Revolution, as you mentioned, happens, and the number of Mexican immigrants grows dramatically in the 10s and 20s. So children are undergoing a lot of changes. And one of the really important changes is a social change that kind of ties into what Charlie was talking about. Children were seen as people that were vulnerable, which we know that children are vulnerable in many ways. Children were seen as needing to be educated. They should not be working. Yet for Mexican-American children, schooling was limited. The pay of their fathers and mothers was very low, and so many had to drop out of school. So for Mexican-American children, they're caught in these contradictory trends of one, society says, you're Mexican-American, you should work even as a child, and reformers saying, parents have to keep their children in schools and then have a nice home.
So what did you find out as far as, I mean, that was difficult to choose.
It was difficult to choose. And Mexican-American children working was supported really by institutions. So even though, for example, the state of Texas passed a child labor law in the 1910s, they excluded agriculture from being covered. So where were most children working? In agriculture. The schools had truancy laws, but they didn't apply to Mexican-American children. The schools in the South Side actually offered half a day of schooling, while schools north of the tracks offered a full day of schooling. So what you find over and over for Mexican-American children is that we were never on an equal footing, which is why you get to the 1960s and the median level of education for Mexican-Americans is ninth grade, while for Euro-Americans it was already 12th grade.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because anyone who's read Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, and they read about the Irish immigrants and the atrocities that they had to face. The children working in freezing cold weather without any gloves, what they had to do and walk and work in the packing plants, and then of course coal miners' children having to work as well. And it seems like a lot of immigrant children across the country were forced to have to go to work to make ends meet.
That's true, and it's reflecting the low wages that the immigrant parents received and the kinds of jobs that the parents could get. You know, our very first factory in the United States hired only children. So child labor is something that is part of our history. It's part of a tragedy of our history because the places where kids worked, just like today, were the most dangerous kinds of jobs. Today we have children in the United States working in the tobacco fields, also in Africa working in the tobacco fields. And by picking the leaves of the plant, they get nicotine poisoning. Mm-hmm. So child labor is something that to me is still very timely and something that in many ways is invisible to us.
Daniel, tell us, what can people expect to see at this exhibit if they go and visit, and hopefully they will?
Yeah, I think, we found a wonderful collection of images at the University of Texas Austin, the Russell Lee Collection, and it just illustrates a lot of what Dr. Label was just talking about, the children in labor, and a lot of it's domestic labor, so it's young girls babysitting, young girls helping with the laundry, just helping around the home, kind of that unpaid labor that's often overlooked, but wonderful, wonderful images. So that we found some, my students, Charlie, really dug out there and found, I would say, probably about 50 or 60 images that are really just wonderful, that capture the time. There's also a lot of artifacts. You mentioned play earlier. That was one of the things that I found very interesting, is that there weren't they didn't have the means to buy toys, and so you just make your own. So we have some handmade toys that are in the collection that were either in the museum's collection or were donated by Dr. Leva and students in the history class, as well as things like comic books. I think my students found it interesting that comic books come up in this later in this period, in the 30s and 40s, and they're this means of escape, right? So that you can get out of the world that you live in by escaping into a comic book and the Batman and these other heroes. And now, I mean, the connections to today, it's so interesting to see that, all these kids nowadays, I have a 10-year-old boy, and they all know all these superheroes, but that they started back then. So that was one of the neat things, that things changed a lot, but some things have remained the same.
Yeah, the connection to the past and the present, I think, is also one of my favorite things about it. There's a lot of things that are different, but there are a lot of things that remain the same, even as far as, passages rites of passage.
Right.
So you always had your communions, you had, quinceañeras, you had all those things. Those were always something that we still do today, and it was part of your childhood then. So I don't know. I think that's really...
Just out of curiosity, because, Daniel, you were mentioning, comic books and superheroes. In one of the classes that I teach, it's about radio and television programming, and we focus on radio programs, the golden age of radio. And I was just wondering if that plays any part in this, or is this something that was mostly just listened to by mostly American kids, the radio serials?
Oh, definitely listened to by kids as well. Yeah. The way that we organized the exhibit was in spaces. And we kind of thought of how would a child spend his or her day, so starting in the house. So we have a little living room. And that's the first thing we thought of was a TV. And then we said, no, we have to go before that. We have to have a radio as the center of family entertainment.
And so you were able to get one.
So we were able to. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it still works, and you get stories from the 1950s.
I wish.
No. Yeah, yeah. So when people go to see this exhibit, one of the things that they might want to know is there an admission? And also, how long is this exhibit going to be there?
There is no admission. So the city, it's a city museum, the El Paso Museum of History. So it's free to the public, and it's open till July 10th is how long it's open for. So it'll be open for a while. There will be public programming, including Dr. Leyva's giving a talk next month.
Well, we want to thank you all very much for being with us here today. And if you wouldn't mind, if you want to share a specific website that people can go to find out more about the museum or about what you all have been talking about.
I think it would be the El Paso Museum of History website. If you go, I think if you just Google or whatever.
The El Paso City website?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The city website would definitely do it. And definitely MCAD, the Museum of Cultural Affairs Division, there's a direct link from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for being with us here today. And again, this exhibit will be on display till July 10th, and that is at the El Paso Museum of History. We've been visiting with Yolanda Leyva, Daniel Carey Whalen, Charlie Vasquez, and Lucero Duran, all talking about this great exhibit. Thank you all very much for being with us here today.
Thank you.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.